trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Merrick, how's it going?
Hey, D. I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm living the dream. You know, I get to chat to Bitcoiners. This is my therapy right now. So thank you for sharing your time and energy with me.
Oh, thanks for having me, man.
It's my pleasure. Trust me. How did you discover Bitcoin?
How did I discover Bitcoin? All right. So I think my first touch point was back in 2011. I heard about it in some forums fairly young then, like in my teenage years. Heard about this internet money thing. As I was reading about it, I was like, oh, let's give it a shot. Back then, you could download this miner, which was really DOS-like looking software. Downloaded it. There was no 12 and 24 words back then. It was your long alphanumeric strings. That was your keys, which the forum recommended that you write and keep safely, which I kind of did. I wrote it on a sticky note, that sticky note in the drawer. And then I had the miner going on for some time. But yeah, back then I was playing Counter-Strike, the first-person shooter game.
Right.
And my Counter-Strike started getting really laggy, so I deleted the miner and I guess everything else with it. And I probably never thought about that sticky note for the longest time. And I think maybe 4 years after that, my mom renovated the house. And yeah, sticky note's gone. Probably lost 50 to 100 Bitcoin. I don't know what it must have been. Man. Yeah, but bought it under the bridge, lost all of that. Come 2018, I moved to Australia. Coming to Australia, it was like just easier to invest in crypto. So I was like, okay, I got back into like, what's this crypto thing? Okay, I just looked at it from a point of view for somewhere to beat inflation, or to put it bluntly, is like just somewhere like I could beat the markets or somewhere I could make money, right? Like come there for the number go up technology. And that's how I started off around 2018. I was studying an MBA here in Australia. And towards the end of my degree, one of the subjects was supply chain management. And over there, I started learning about blockchain, which I found really cool, which I found really interesting. And I started going down more on the blockchain path. I started learning about all these different cryptos and, all about blockchain and cryptos around that time. So I was like, okay, this... I was like, oh, this is cool and all. So I was like, this seems interesting. I should find some work in this field. And yeah, I looked up what sort of crypto blockchain work is around Melbourne. I reached out to a few people and a crypto company, they got back to me. They wanted, they offered me a job. And basically it was a crypto research company where their co-marketing or their co-product was identifying places, identifying crypto assets where people can invest. Just putting it bluntly, more like a pump and dump, right? They'll tell you,
more like a pump. Don't sugarcoat it, man.
yeah, more like a pump and dump kind of a thing. But at the same time, while working with them, task was to, I worked closely with Glassnode, Checkmate from Glassnode, who does the Bitcoin reports. And I was proofreading some of his stuff and then that was slowly taking me more towards Bitcoin. And then, I don't know, I think I by myself, I was like, oh, I went, like, I saw like this NFT boom and like people buying these monkey pictures at these ridiculous amounts. So I was like, okay, like something prompted me to like go down the money path and like see what, like how, why do people place value in things, and like, and then I just went down this money rabbit hole. Coming out on the other side of this hole, like that's where I found Bitcoin again. Like that's where I found Bitcoin. Like truly right. Understood Bitcoin. Yeah. So that's been my journey. And then ever since I found that, I was like, oh, I need to know all about it. Like everything, like, yeah, whatever information, like I need to digest it all. So I was like, oh, I think the best place for me, I think before this, even I read 21 Lessons by Gigi. Mm-hmm. And then I read Layered Money by, I can't remember his name, but I read Layered Money, Nick Bhatia, if I remember correctly. And then I was like, okay, then I found this Sailor Org course, Bitcoin for Everybody. I was like, okay, let me give that a shot. And I did that course, and like I learned about like Bitcoin's history. I learned about all these. I learned about the cypherpunk history, which was really interesting. Like you know, there's like learned if you go down the money path, like you learn that money is the tool that was all like the person in authority, like so whether that would have been a king, they always found a way of creating more money for themselves or creating more of that currency for themselves. So like there was always this intelligent, or the cypherpunks that would find a way, like, you know, to point that out to the general public. Or like, so even when the internet was discovered, like there were these cypherpunks that were trying to create a money that cannot be debased, or the money that cannot. And there were like all these early ideas like digital gold, e-cash, hash cash, all of this, right? And like, and all of this put in together, that's where Bitcoin comes. So I've like, you know, many a times when I talk about Bitcoin, like people come back, oh, Bitcoin is just 14 years old. But they don't realize, like, you know, like people have been trying to come to Bitcoin for the longest time. Like I would say it goes back before the internet as well, right? Like there would have been somewhere like people are trying to like just exchange gold nuggets for gold nuggets instead of using the coins that were issued by a king.
Yeah, there's like an entire genealogy existing underneath the surface of this 14 yep. years that we're privy to. And it's like to dive down that rabbit hole, which I must admit I haven't as much as I would like. It's quite amazing. There is a graphic I think you can find online which sort of almost sort of maps out a family tree of how we kind of got to Bitcoin and goes through all of those iterations that you were just talking about. I think if I can find it, I'll chuck it in the show notes. But
is it a fishbone diagram?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I'm aware of it. Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary. And that's the thing, like you can throw, well, it's just this 14-year-old, dumb protocol, really, that's going to bound to be replaced. And I mean, speaking of, you know, then it causes you to maybe find the next best thing. So it's like MySpace, yep. Facebook argument. But I mean, back in the day, you know, you didn't just shitcoin. You like full on like went deep into that world.
Yes.
Which is, you know, you just didn't follow in your incentives at the end of the day. But I mean, what's curious to me is like, was there an echo or something reverberating around in your brain when you were mining effectively on, I guess, your PC, your laptop, whatever, when you were trying to play Counter-Strike? was there a niggling sense that you'd kind of missed something, or did you just full on get caught up in the siren song of, you know, the shitcoin realm?
Nah, so I didn't really know what is Bitcoin, or for that matter, what is money back then, right? Like I just thought, this is some cool internet thing like these internet people are playing with. So I was like, let me give it a shot as well. This is like back in the torrenting days. And yeah, so I didn't really feel a pinch for letting it go like back then. But yeah, back then, like I didn't feel like no shitcoining as well back then, but yeah, just didn't know what it was. And
it was just like this novel
yeah, just
tool
this
or like
thing
a
that,
toy. You're like, yeah. Oh, this is cool. I might have a play around with this for a minute, and then
yeah. And I think an incentive there was still like, if I remember correctly, there's like, oh, this thing might go up in value, so you might hold some, right? Like, so it's like, oh yeah, that was one yeah thing. Like, oh, maybe I can make some money off this.
Well, see, at least you recognized some sort of value there, because I mean, I can recall mm-hmm. having conversations back in the day in like 2011, maybe 2012. When I was in London, and you know, there's a buddy of mine talking to me about it and mentioned it, and I just did the American HODL thing, just wrote it off as like internet money for nerds. I was just like, forget it. Like that sounds stupid. I'm not doing that. I'm going to get drunk. You know, and like I guess everyone kind of has that initial touch point, maybe.
Yep.
That they don't recognize, but you're at least, oh, there's something there just from the novelty of playing around with it, which is cool. But then you did a Luke Dash Jr. and just, you know, put it on a post-it note and whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brutal. So why do you think that you were open and able, I guess, to discovering Bitcoin?
Yeah, good question. I think from my, like, earliest days, I was always questioning things, like always questioning, like I remember like religion, right? Like go back to religion, like, oh, there's like good and evil, right and wrong, whatever, right? And then I used to question like, who's to decide what's good and bad? Like who's to decide like what's right and wrong? And then I remember earliest days, like learning about, like these Sunday schools that we used to have through church, and learning that like the priest back then used to charge people to like redeem their sins, basically. Like, so if you're a rich man, you could go to the priest, pay them some money, and then you're sin free, I guess.
Yeah, like and a tithing. We do that with taxes these days.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, so basically, so yeah, like I was like, oh, like, yeah, absolutely. So then I realized, oh, religion is a scam. And then like coming from like you're born into a religion, right? So like, oh, so basically like I'm saying my mom or telling the priest, like, oh, you're telling me just because I'm born in this Catholic family means, and if I follow these 10 rules or whatever it was, I get to go to heaven. But what about my Hindu friend here? Like, you know, he's not introduced to these 10 rules, and he doesn't know about the God that we know of, so he doesn't get to come to heaven. And like, you know, all these kinds of questions from these, like from an early day, I think that curious mind of mine led me down the path to finding Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you were born into like Western religion rather than say Hinduism, yes. Bhagavad Gita sort of style.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Born.
Yep. So my dad's father was Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my mom's family is also from like I was just having this conversation last night with someone from my gym, and like, oh, he's like, oh, you're Catholic. And it's like very strange. Like there must be like just 5-10% of the Indian population that's Catholic. I was like, yeah, you're pretty much right. But then it's like these small pockets within India where there'd be like it just like the major population in the small pocket would be Catholics. So yeah, so I was lucky or unlucky, but I was like born into one of these small pockets where yeah the major population is Catholic. So it's surprising, like, because if I start naming off my cousins and if I start naming my friends, they're all like, oh, so I'll give you a few names. So it's Gary, Gavin, Brent, Dylan, Bradley, Titus. Like, you know, like that's my family and friends, right? Like they're all, there's no Ram, Sham or anything. Like everyone I know has like these, yeah.
These sort of Western-styled names.
Western name. Yeah, like my grandfather is Joe and the other one was John and like, yeah.
That's so cool. That's like incredibly unique, I guess, because you're saying there's a little pocket. That's pretty gnarly. So, but as you were saying, that sort of curiosity to, and I guess a healthy dose of skepticism as well, in that you were comparing yourself and your experience with religion to your friends, kind of propelled you to to question that and go down, I guess, either the agnostic or potentially even all the way through to atheism.
Atheism. Yeah, for sure. I used to tell my mom, like, early days itself, oh, I'm an atheist.
And how did that go down, Noel?
There's one point, there were several times, like, oh, you need to go to church. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to church. But they know that I'm, like, just stepping out of the house but not going to church. This is, like, probably teenage years. Yeah, late teens and, like, early 20s. Late teens, very likely. And then there's this one point my mom and dad sit me down and it's like, oh, you really have to, like, you know, like, there's God and, like, I know you don't believe in it, but there's a God and there's, like, good and evil, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, maybe you're right, but, like, you don't get to force this on me. And I was like we had just had a good conversation regarding it. Like, you don't get to decide for me, like, right? And that was the last of it, I think. They still force me to go, like, oh, it's Christmas, so you need to go to church. And I do sometimes, but
yeah. It's interesting that concept of good and evil. I mean, it's universal and it's probably distilled most, you know, concisely in something like the Bible. But you look out into the world and it's almost, if you apply it through a Bitcoin lens, there is sort of like an element of good and evil. You've got the good sound money versus the evil unsound money, the fiat and all of the characters that are involved. I mean, Augustus Carsons and Christine Lagarde and all of these individuals that just look shady, don't they? I mean...
Yep. 100%. But you know, now coming back to Bitcoin and like Bitcoiners from all walks of life, right? And like I was just recently speaking to a pastor down in Texas who's a Bitcoiner, and then there's a book called Thank God for Bitcoin, which takes you down this religious route, like comparing some notes from the Bible to Bitcoin, and like, you know, and then I can't remember who it was, but they make a really good point. Like one of the main reasons why Jesus was crucified, which is not like, you know, it's like lost history basically, because of course the Bible has been translated over God knows how many times, and how many kings' agendas have been put into these newer versions of the Bible. But one of the early, like, when it goes back to, like, Jesus was the guy who used to go around town flipping the tables of moneylenders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then it goes back to, like, you know, it's the same thing, right? Like, the money, like, he would have, like, Jesus was a Bitcoiner, basically.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, Jesus and the money changers, where they were using, false weights?
False weights, yes.
Entirely au fait with that. I was sort of similar to you, is in that I went down a massive Richard Dawkins rabbit hole where I read The Blind Watchmaker and Unweaving the Rainbow, and I think one of the bigger ones was The God Delusion, you know, and that kind of cemented, I guess, some atheism in me. But then, you know, I guess in the last few years I've sort of come around, not 100% full circle, but... I remember actually going to a, what would you call them? There's a, what's the word? I don't know. I got a copy of the Bhagavad Gita when I went there.
Oh, nice, yes.
And I spent like 24 hours with them. This was as I was working in my old life as a journalist. And I just wanted to do a story on these guys, and it was very fascinating. And we got up super early, went to the temple, and did all of that sort of stuff. And
where was this again? Sorry,
I'm trying to think of the name of the place.
Varanasi.
It was like a Hindu temple on the outskirts of town, where they were just completely self sufficient, you know.
Oh, well, so it's somewhere in Australia?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
Krishna, sort of like Hare Krishna.
Yep.
Yeah, God, I'm blanking on it. But I found that quite fascinating. Like, there was elements to that which I found curious, and it kind of kind of, you know, was curious. And I've got a copy of Thank God for Bitcoin book.
Oh, yeah, thank God.
As well. And I really like the way that Jimmy Song and co throw Bitcoin through that kind of lens. You know, and there's I mean, during COVID and stuff, I picked up the Bible like most, I think, well, like a lot of people, and just sort of dove in and tried to understand, well, what's this story all about, you know? And I appreciate the kind of redemptive elements of, say, a religion, irrespective of what it is, and the sort of touch points or the crossovers in the, in like a Venn diagram of what Bitcoin enables. And I guess that's kind of part and parcel of what this pod is all about, is, you know, discovering the Genesis journey, the hero's journey of a Bitcoiner, discovering Bitcoin and how it's kind of, you know, affected them in their lives. You know, so you always had that healthy dose of skepticism and curiosity, which you think allowed you to be receptive to something like Bitcoin.
And you know, like going back to like the going back to the Bible, the moneylender story comes in Matthew 21.
Right.
Yeah. So it goes back to like our 21. But and the Bhagavad Gita is again another really interesting book. I don't know if you've read it, or, but like I've read it, and like I found it one of the most fascinating books. Somewhere around COVID lockdowns, the lockdowns were pretty bad for most people, and like, but I found it really good for myself. Like, good for me. Like, it just being at home, it like separated me from some of my friends per se, and like it just, and I started focusing more on myself, and then I like started focusing more on about, oh, okay, I need to take care of my health, I need to start working out, okay. And then I discovered Sam Harris back then, and it's like, oh, let's try, like, yeah, look, go down the meditation path, and like I found it so insightful. And then I picked up, and like somewhere around those lines I picked up the Bhagavad Gita as well. And yeah, it's one of the most fascinating books because it gives you all these. It's very interesting because, like, one part is like, oh, there's this war going on with this king, but he has to fight his own brothers and uncles, and you know, like there's one side, like basically he's going into war against his own family, and yeah, so that's the story. But it's also like it's something I think an individual would do to find himself as well, right? Like, and then like Krishna suggests all these different paths to reach him, and him being basically another word for like this enlightenment. Like, you know, there's not just this one path that would take you to enlightenment, but you could go. So there's a path of dharma. So dharma is service. So you could go and just service, and like, and when it's service, it's not like, oh, I'm going to be helpful with to everyone and then I'll reach this point. But it's like doing the right thing, like doing right by or whatever you think is the right thing, like in that given moment, without an expectation for the fruits of your labor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's effectively the story of Arjuna, I think.
Yes, Arjuna is the king. Yeah.
And he's faced with a challenge to, yeah, as you say, go to battle with his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Krishna appears as his sort of like a guide, and he takes Arjuna through effectively like personal development. And the teaching effectively is like selfless action to contribute. And to give without necessarily receiving anything material in kind, I guess. And it's all about contribution effectively to a cause, a community, a family, whatever it is. And yeah, doing the right thing. I haven't dived too deep into it, but it's interesting that there's a lot of universal themes that crop up in the Bhagavad Gita, with the Bible, with the Quran. You know, these are Lindy texts that have just existed for thousands of years, and
Yep.
And they're distillations of effectively the human condition, I think. And that's the value that I start to see in books like that. And it's almost instantiated within Bitcoin, because it actually allows you to pursue that selfless action and social cooperation. Like, I think the book by Mises, Ludwig von Mises, Human Action. Right. It was originally titled Social Cooperation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I didn't know that. He changed it. And I mean, the interesting thing there is, like, Human Action, you know, it's about,
okay, I'll fill in that. So, there's an AI bot. So basically, you can chat with Krishna. You can ask him questions.
And he responds
to you. Yeah, I'll send you a link so you could probably put it in the show notes.
Yeah, so do that.
So he's like, you could ask him, like, oh, what's addiction, per se? Like, oh, what's whatever, right? Like, whatever you want to have a conversation with this with this AI god.
No way. That's crazy.
Yeah. And given that we have, like, thank God for Bitcoin from a Christian lens, and, like, there's another book, from a Catholic lens. So there's another one from a Christian lens. And I'm pretty sure soon there'd be someone writing up something from a Hindu perspective as well, like tying it to Bitcoin.
Well, that's the beautiful thing. It just touches so many elements of life. This dumb protocol sitting there, just beeping away or whatever every 10 minutes. But, like, human action as purposeful behavior, and so when people act, you know, they're trying to achieve something, like it's a means to an end, and through that action they're economizing. And it sounds like a very selfish thing to do, because effectively people are acting within their own self-interests to achieve purposeful ends, to make something. It's like that, there's a really, what is the line, a felt uneasiness. And you have this felt uneasiness and you're compelled to action to try and mitigate that felt uneasiness, to try and change something about yourself so that you can, address whatever that felt uneasiness is. And that sounds like, on the superficial reading of it, like a very selfish thing to do, but we're all doing it. The only reason that you're doing this pod right now is you're effectively acting in your own self-interest. I'm acting in my own self-interest, but together we're cooperating to try and create some sort of interesting content for someone to listen to, which may 100%. Contribute some value to them. And that's not for you and I to decide. That's for them to decide.
Yes.
And what's magic is that with something like Podcasting 2.0 via Breeze, Fountain App, whatever, you actually get to see that happen. And I don't know about you with your pod, man, but I've seen sats be streamed my way and just being like, holy shit, that is cool. You know?
Yes. Yep. And but going back to it, like, let me put that question back to you. Like, when did you find Bitcoin?
I think that's a question for your pod, brother.
All right.
Yeah, okay. This pod ain't for this. This is a podcast I try my best to not
make it about yourself.
Make it about myself. Yeah. I mean, if people want to listen, they can. They'll probably figure it out the more I talk on this damn thing.
Okay.
I'm curious to know, how has Bitcoin and how has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
I mean, like, one of the biggest thing is, like, when you, the concept of time preference, right? Like, I mean, I would have known it, like, something like time preference goes unnoticed, or it's like, you know, you don't realize it's a thing that is of importance. And just from your perspective, what do you think, like, if you were had to, like, for the someone that's listening that doesn't know what's time, time preference, like, how would you describe it? And then I'll
Time preference, I was actually writing about this recently, trying to link it back to some earlier work that I've been working on. But time preference is a concept in economics which it's the degree to which an individual values present over the future, or I guess kind of like the ratio at which you might value the present compared with the future. So like the best example, which I would encourage listeners to go and read, is the chapter in Hans Hermann Hoppe's Democracy, the God That Failed, Time Preference and the Process of Decivilization, and how he's able to link the concept of time preference is actually linked to a civilizing society, and how you're able to build civilizations the more individuals within that civilization have a low time preference, adopt a long time horizon, they're able to actually perform long-term planning and investment, which generates long-term gains as opposed to short-term, you know, gains.
Right, right, right. I think like a really basic example or really the thing would be like working out.
Yeah.
So either you could be lazy today, sit down, watch TV, knowing that like, you know, in the future it might not add value to you, or you know, you could go out for a run or do some push-ups or do some pull-ups or whatever, knowing that you won't see that immediate change from those pull-ups or push-ups, but if you keep at it and like if you keep doing some of it daily, it's like it's going to be beneficial to you in the long run. Another thing would be eating healthy, right? Like, so you could eat a donut today, you could eat one tomorrow, you could eat fast food because that's easy, right? Like you go there, you drive through, you have your food ready, like the food's ready, you got it.
Yeah, you don't even have to get out of the car, man. You can just do it on your phone.
yeah. True. And that was something that I spoke about at the Bush Bash as well, right? Like the world has perfected itself to satisfy our animalistic desires. Yeah, those were my words.
Yeah.
The world has perfected itself to satisfy our animalistic desires. Even with the food that's the fast food, they know exactly, it needs to have like salt, it needs to have like this crunchy outside and then this soft inside. I'm talking about French fries here. Don't go anywhere. And then you eat your French fries and then you eat your burger and then you have your Coke and like everything is like there's sugar and like everything that plays with your senses perfectly, right? Like but the right thing to do would be like so that you would categorize as high time preference behavior, because you're not thinking about the future consequences, you're just satisfying your needs for today or just in that moment rather. But in a long time preference, it'd be like taking the trouble to cook your own cook your own meal, use the right ingredients, make sure like it's a healthy meal, and that's how I put it, like, you know, just with an example, what's time preference.
And so discovering Bitcoin has allowed you to effectively recognize the concept of time preference. So I've always had an intuitive understanding of time preference, but never been able to label it or name it. It's always just been like this, I guess, will to want to take my time and understand that good things tend to take time. And it's not to discount, you know, the things that are, you know, like drinking or eating crap food or whatever. Like they can be good in moderation, but But being able to label it, being able to name it, time preference, wow, that is a concept that people have written about, thought about deeply. Obviously, it's all throughout Safe's book, The Bitcoin Standard, which everyone should read. But you're right. Discovering Bitcoin enabled you to find the concept of time preference and then help you frame up the way you are in the world?
100%. Yeah, helped me frame up against... It's just another lens where you could look at your own actions, right?
Right.
It's just another, yeah.
A lens, exactly. And so it's actually provided more clarity in terms of your action, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And so what are the benefits then of having adopting this concept of time preference? You mentioned like there's the difference between high time preference, eating lots of junk food and not working out or working on yourself. Yep. Versus low time preference, which I guess is the opposite, right?
Yep. So I think, from discovering Bitcoin and slowly wrapping my head around this concept now, other than my recent holiday back in Bombay, if my mom's listening, but yeah, coming back, other than my recent holiday, which I have indulged in some high type preference behavior.
It's Christmas, man. It's part and parcel of the deal, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, so coming back to now is like, okay, I would look at every minute, like how I'm going to spend every minute of my day or every hour and make sure like, you know, it's either adding value to what I'm going to be in the future or it's taking away. It's like it's doing the opposite. So just like, yeah, it's not more such of planning, but just making those decisions within those moments of like, oh, should I be spending my time doing X or should I be spending my time doing Y? And should I be spending my time doing something that's high time preference or should I be spending my time doing something that's a low time preference? Or that would basically something that's going to add more value to my life instead of, just satisfying my desires in the current moment.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not sustainable, is it, to have a high time preference, really? It's you can effectively sit on the couch and order in food and watch whatever you want on telly or whatever. You can indulge in all of the high velocity trash that you can set your mind to if you want to.
Yep.
But it's going to catch up with you at some point. I've got friends of ours who recently purchased a house and it was a pretty ginormous house. You know, it was built way back in the day and it was all overgrown. Every room was filled with junk and rubbish and piled up with old magazines and pots and pans and crockery and all sorts.
Yep.
To paint a picture, in the backyard, which was a pretty big backyard, they found three motor cars underneath a whole bunch of just overgrowth, really, just weeds and plants and stuff. They found three. Oh, they also found a shipping container. There's a shipping container hidden amongst all of the overgrowth. Wow. So three motor cars and a shipping container, and the shipping container was full of stuff. And this person that lived there, you know, they, I guess they just accumulated all of this stuff. Now, I don't know whether or not they ordered Uber Eats every day or not, but I mean, the point is that it's going to catch up with you at some point, whether you're just dead. Yeah. And so you're dead. So, and then everyone's dead in the long run, but to cultivate a high time preference, what are you leaving behind? A whole bunch of junk or a low time preference where you're leaving behind something that someone else can take up and run with, you know? And it's interesting that Bitcoin enables you to distill that and give you clarity.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking about junk, and something that me and my partner like doing is like we're every year we are moving to a new place. So we got to reevaluate our belongings and give away stuff. And in a year we start accumulating a bit of more stuff. And then towards the end, we start giving away and then we reduce things so that it's easier to move and be mobile. And just from my from my own wardrobe, I remember back in India, I used to have three cupboards full of clothes, a cupboard especially for all my shirts because I used to work as a banker.
Right.
And then and trousers and shirts, and then I used to like all these cool t-shirts or rock bands or whatever it may be, and have all those in there. And now I've decided, oh, that's just too hard. And I still love wearing tie-dye, big fan of the Grateful Dead.
Right on.
So still love wearing tie-dye And then suddenly I thought, oh, what am I doing? I'm dressing up to be a peacock. I'm just want to be a peacock showing off its colors and who am I trying to impress? So lately I've been just culling my wardrobe per se, and I've just gone to wearing black. It's simple. If you see some of the people that are highly functional in society, Steve Jobs, for example, he just had his polo neck and his blue jeans, right? That was his uniform per se.
Yeah.
Day in and day out. And that's another thing, because what I came across is that you have a limited capacity of making decisions every day. And if you're going to be deciding on what you're going to be wearing and how you're going to be looking at that, takes in from that fuel tank of your decision making, right? Like so you want to plan, like you don't have to decide all of that. Like just get in the cupboard, it's the same black t-shirt, or all of them are the same black t-shirt. Just pick one up, wear it, and you're good to go. So you're not deciding, and you can have that left to make other critical decisions.
Yeah, it's the ultimate low time preference clothes. There's no optionality there. You just like, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm wearing today, and just let's go. It's kind of like safe with these steaks only. Like he talks about, why bother processing all of this food and ingredients and everything when you can just eat a steak. I don't know. I don't quite align with that. I actually really enjoy food and experiencing food, but certainly with clothes, it's just like, who cares really?
With food, I would, if I was living by myself, I think I would have been like safe. Like I really don't care. Like I would have just, like if I know like, oh, steak's good for you, I'd just like fill my fridge up with steaks and just eat the same thing day in and day out, or eggs and bacon and steaks at night. Like I would have been doing that. But I'm lucky that my partner's a chef, and so she's always like, you know, experimenting with different stuff, nothing that's high time preference, but always experimenting and finding ways of like, you know, creating these new dishes or whatever it may, or she wants to go out and try something new. So I'm lucky on that.
Oh yeah,
I get to try stuff. Yeah,
I mean, you don't have to, like, low time preference can be applied to cooking, where you just really, it's just about giving your time and energy to something to fully understand it and yield the greatest amount of pleasure, I guess, in which sounds a little high time preference-y, but not really. Like pleasure is subjective, same as value, and I think there's combinations of food that you can experience in this life, and they just blow your socks off. You know, the complexity of a broth, or the textures of some sort of dish, and when you get a competent chef that just goes hard at combining all of these things, that can be quite a remarkable experience. You know, that takes time and energy to execute properly, and it actually takes time and energy for you to be able to pay the requisite amount for that too. Yep. So you know, it's sort of mutual. When you were a banker and you said you were doing your MBA as well, was there anything about that particular gig that dissuaded you from fully grokking Bitcoin early doors, which may have sort of pushed you into that sort of blockchain, you know, realm? Or was it not, didn't they not really meet at all?
I mean, like, yeah, like going down like banking, my undergraduate degree was in business as well. So my master's degree was in business as well. So I kept learning about banking, and it was clear that, like, you know, once, so you learn how a central bank works, you learn how like a retail banks work, wholesale bank work, the central bank, like how it operates, and then when you keep going higher up, and then it's all just mumbo jumbo, like, oh, they have this thing called fiscal policy and monetary policy, and they can move some numbers around, and then they increase the money supply, decrease the money supply. It just sounded like all really weird, and like, you know, but I thought like, oh, okay, maybe that's how the world works, right? Mm-hmm. Like it didn't really like, oh, there could be something that works better. Like, no, I thought, oh, maybe that's how the world works, and like just took it with a grain of salt back then. And then like finding out, coming to Bitcoin, and like finding out all of that came back to me, and like, oh, okay, yeah, now I see what like all this is about. Yeah, kind of a thing.
It's crazy that it's mumbo jumbo and you recognized all of that the higher you went up. It's just a constant layer of obfuscation.
Yes.
To keep anyone that's at all interested or questioning they just come across these words, they just go, oh, okay, scrambled my brain, I don't know. And then they put it back on themselves and they're like, maybe I'm too stupid to understand this and it's just for smart people. And it's like, couldn't be further from the truth. It's just complete bullshit that's designed to confuse you and keep you away from actually understanding what's going on, which is theft, basically.
Yes. And theft on so many levels, right? Like, so just the other day I was telling a friend, like, you know, okay, so I've earned the salary, I pay tax on it, and now my salary is taxed, it's in my account. I use my taxed money to go buy a drink, and I pay tax again there. And right, like, and the guy I'm buying a drink from, he's paying tax as well. Okay, and where is he sourcing his drink from? Okay, he's buying it from a wholesaler, but he's that guy's paying tax there. And like, it's this whole system that's like, it's just tax of tax and like this tax there. And then to top all that off, there's inflation, which is another tax, right? Like, they're like, yeah. So like, at the end of it, it's like, if you have $100, like the true value you're getting out of it is like, it comes down to less than $10.
Yeah, I mean, forget the turtles. It's taxation all the way down, you know?
Yeah.
And you take that dollar, and as you just outlined, like, you get, you earn that dollar, you pay tax on the way in for your, you pay tax on the way out, they pay tax. Like, how much is this dollar worth actually for the product that I'm engaging with? It's crazy. I don't know. So you were able to sort of see through a lot of that, though, because...
Yeah. And then, another thing that comes from banking was... I started as a junior banker, and then I grew up to, like, yeah, doing everything at a branch level, like, you know, from a savings bank account to your fixed deposits to be a cash management, like, to issuing loans. So I did like everything that a retail banker would do. And one thing was like, if it was a day like where all my customers came and withdrew, like they wanted to withdraw money, basically a bank run, I would only be able to give away 10% of that, or less than that even. Right, because like, there's no money in the vaults. There's no, just digital everything, or not even digital. Yeah, just like a number in the.
It's ledger, just numbers, right? Like, on a screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you couldn't even. Yeah, you would be. It's impossible to withdraw that amount of money. That's why you get all those questions when you go and withdraw, even just like a chunk of change, like $2,000. You always get like so what is this for? Let me go and check, make sure we've got enough to cover. Like, it's like, sorry, what? I don't understand. I thought this was a bank.
Yeah, and to top it off, it's like there's like instances where you got to explain to the bank of why do you need your own money. Right? Like, if you're, I'm withdrawing more than certain amount, or I'm withdrawing more than, say, per se, like $20,000, my account holds $100,000. Oh, why do you need $20,000 in cash? It's my money. I need it for whatever. But no, you got to maybe fill out a form, maybe declare of what that $20,000 is going to be used towards, and like all sorts of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. KYC, AML, man. It's crazy. Yeah. I usually, at that point, in the rare instances that I've ever done that, I usually just say, none of your business, is my money. I'm doing what I want with it. You know, I'm going to go and buy a used car from a terrorist. What do you reckon about that?
Yeah, but it's easier for us in Australia, like in a developed country. But it's like, you go back to Lebanon or you go back to any of these places, right? They've reduced your withdrawals to, I think, less than $500 that you can get out in cash. And then recently they debased their currency by 90%. So yes, so today, like, you have $1,000 in your $1,000 in cash in your wallet. Next morning you get up, your $1,000 is worth $100.
Yeah. Just lop a zero off, just arbitrarily.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing that you were saving up for the day before, that you were looking forward to buying today,
is gone up in price.
It's gone up in price through no fault of your own, no fault at all, other than a decision, an arbitrary decision made by a few people in a room. That have decided that this is best to quote unquote save the economy or something. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. Bitcoin allows you to see through that sham and that scam, you know.
Yep. 100%. Yes.
So what have you learned about the world then, and even yourself, since discovering Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, as we discussed, like, there's so much, especially from the money point of view, there's so much you learned about, like, how the world operates and, like, how the people in power are able to create money out of thin air, basically. And then just creating that money out of thin air, how is that, like, affecting the entire society? And, like, these few people in power get to decide, I mean, get to make these decisions without consulting like the rest of us, and just rob. Basically, it's come down to, like, we let these people rob us and we call it legal, right? Like, I think Eric Kassan says this, we let these people rob us and we let them do it like in daylight, and we let them call it legal, and they've been doing it for so many years and it's going to go on.
Well, I mean, yeah, keep so in mind too that these people are unelected as well, so there's no accountability.
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
and it's not like politicians really are held to an account either. Often, mm-hmm. And there is a channel and a way to hold them to account. But yeah, Jay Powell is not accountable. Really? He's making decisions for the value of money all throughout the world.
He
does it once a month with a bunch of other people in suits. And then they have the audacity to come out to like a conference, you know, whenever it was, end of last year, where they're like, oh, yeah, we're starting to understand more about how inflation works. And it's like, bro, what? Sorry?
Yeah.
How much are you getting paid again?
And that's just the Fed, right? And then you spoke about KYC and AML. So KYC and AML is another body that's like, and there's FATFA. Have you heard of FATFA?
Oh, yeah. Financial Action Task Force, something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Something like that, right? Like, they come out of nowhere, unelected, and they get to decide like all these rules that are going to be imposed on people all over the world. And if your country is not going to be part of, like, is not going to follow these rules, your country is cut off from the whole banking system or the whole international trade system. So even if you have a good government that doesn't want to be part of this game, they have to be part of this game just because they'll be cut off of international trade. And then there's going to be the KYC and AML, like, everyone under the sun. The reason being, like, it's for your safety too. We are doing this to catch these criminals, but at the end of the day, that, like, the criminal activity still goes on, and it's just the innocents that are the ones that's getting robbed by the ones in power.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a criminal is going to criminal irrespective of what kind of laws, because they're a criminal and that's what they do. And it's usually when those databases that house all of that sensitive information and ID identifications and stuff. It's just Higgs's ratchet effect, man. It's you know, problem, reaction, solution, and then they just repeat that ad infinitum over and over again. And they create the problem. They wonder, gosh, how could this have happened? I have no idea. People then ask, when should I worry? And then they come up with the solution to the problem they created. It's just arsonist and firefighter all in one package. That's really how this whole thing plays out. And we're all just suckers paying for it all, actually, which is interestingly enough, paying for it all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and good luck trying not to pay for that stuff either, because the threat of violence is pretty hardcore, even though they don't state it explicitly. It's implicitly
pretty. I mean, good luck trying to skip your taxes for a year. Yeah,
yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we've got to figure out that problem. Maybe a sly roundabout way, I'm not sure.
Oh, what was that, hike?
Yeah. I think so. How do you explain Bitcoin to someone?
I mean, different people, I would have a different approach to it, but I think going down the money route is the easiest.
right.
Like explaining like from like money creation or yeah, and like how the current monetary system around the globe, like how is it operating, and then we come to something like Bitcoin, and just how, like, you know, making a comparison between the two is the easiest way, I think. Yeah.
So if someone didn't have any comprehension of what money is, and that's like vast majority of people, what would you, yeah. what would you, how would you explain what money is to them?
So I think you'd start by telling them, like, firstly, money is a tool. So you come back to like money is a tool. It's like, you know, you don't think like most people, or even for me for that matter, we don't think of it as a tool, but money is just basically a tool or a communication, or money is communication. We are just passing this thing along in exchange for value. It's a tool that helps us store value. It's a tool that helps us exchange things for value, right? And but like what the governments have done over the years is they've hijacked this tool, and they can now and they can create more of this. So money is different from currency is one thing I would also try to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
Like money is different. So we have currencies now, or we have like fiat money, and then there's real money. And I would put gold in the bracket of like real money, and then fiat money, because money, the currency used to be backed by gold, and that's been stolen from us. It's no more backed by gold. Money is not like our current fiat money is not backed by anything, and people don't get that. I was shocked. Like in my recent trip to India, I was talking to some of my friends. Basically, we've had similar education since from childhood up till our graduation. Like we've been buddies all those years, and they still didn't understand money. Maybe because I went down to being a banker and they went down doing whatever they're doing, but they still think money is backed by gold. So like firstly identifying if someone would know if money is backed by gold or not, and then telling them how money is not backed by gold, and governments can create money like out of thin air, and then explaining Bitcoin like as the opposite to that. But you know what tends to happen, like, because as I said, like we live in this world of instant gratification, and like what that also has done to people is like people don't have the capacity to digest information anymore. Like, you know, when you start talking about all of this, they tend to give it a deaf ear after, like the attention span has gotten so small thanks to TikTok videos and Instagram reels or whatever it may be. Yeah. So I think we have to go back to, like, you know, like from doing this podcast, we got to do like some Instagram stuff, dancing around and trying to explain what money is in a short 30 seconds. I think we get the message across.
maybe some, this sounds like late night TV, like a Stephen Colbert, bad skit or something. I'm not Jimmy Fallon. Gosh. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. Bitcoin is a filter, though, and I think it's incumbent upon the individual to do the work to at least meet it halfway. It's just like anything in this world.
Yes.
You know, you have to want to do the work to understand it. You know, I always use an analogy of, you know, going to an art gallery. You can wander around an art gallery or, you know, a museum like the British Museum, and you can look at all the artifacts and the artworks and everything. Yep. And you can superficially nod your head and be like, yeah, that's cool. I like that. But if you have a bit of knowledge about the thing that you're looking at, whether that's in the earpiece as you're walking around, you know, yep, you've got some sort of guided tour, or mm-hmm, you have already done a little bit of work yourself, maybe through university or just, yep, general self-taught, then you can, yep, derive so much more enjoyment and pleasure from observing those objects close up and gaining a deeper appreciation for, yep, the work that the artist or the sculptor or the, you know, the engineer, whatever it is, the artifact, you know,
yes,
took, yep, the time to produce. And it's the same with Bitcoin. Like you've got to want it. It's, you know, you've got to want it. That's I reckon.
Yeah, and going back to it, like, you know, even if I wasted 5 minutes talking to someone, I don't see it as wasted, but I see it like, you know, it's like that touch point. Oh, okay, like Merrick told me about this thing called Bitcoin, and like it's gone in some corner of their brain, but oh, then they see it again somewhere, and then they see it, then they see it again on social media, or then they see, then they hear someone else talk about it, and then they come across it. So all these different touch points may eventually bring them there, right? And then they might go down the path of the hero's journey to finding out exactly what is Bitcoin, or finding out exactly what is money, and then yeah.
That's it, man. You never shoot your shot straight away. I mean, you're pretty lucky. You
know, it's someone that we know, like, you know, we were just talking about before chatting, like Brenton, he explained, I mean, he didn't explain to me this concept, but he put it in these marketing terms. And he said, like, oh, it's you got to jab, 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 and then right hook, right? You can't just give out the right hook. So it's like that, right? Like, so we got to, so with Bitcoin, we jab, like slowly push
soften
that idea.
Soften them up a bit.
Yeah. And then open them up, and then, yeah. And then give them that final blow.
And it takes time.
It does.
You got to have a low time preference. Otherwise, you won't get there. You're not going to make it.
Yeah. Yep, not going to make it.
Merrick, this has been an awesome chat, man. I super appreciate you spending your scarce energy and finite time, or your finite time and your scarce energy. With me, chatting about your discovery of Bitcoin over this time.
Yeah, thanks, D. Yeah, it was super fun. It was like, awesome questions. It took me down this nice path in my own head. Looking forward to checking it out. And yeah, thanks for having me again.
You're welcome, man. You're welcome back anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.